Okay, so our guest this week is a special treat. This is Danelle Puglisi Knutson. You say the K. And Danelle is a dedicated advocate. I've met Danelle at a couple of different conferences. She was at the NARSAL conference. I don't remember if she was at the WAR conference, but this last time she and her group spoke, and they gave such a just astounding presentation that like there was not a dry eye in the house. And everybody I talked to said that was the most powerful speech, powerful presentation I saw during the whole conference, which was saying something because they had some really excellent speakers. So anyway, I just want to introduce her. She works for Florida Action Committee, volunteers for Florida Action Committee. She just got accepted or put on the ACSAL board. And she started her own group called Shine Voices. And she's just amazing, and you're gonna love her. And welcome, Danelle. I can't remember where you go. Do I have to unmute her? Maybe. Yes, probably. There we go.
There we go. And she hopes she doesn't disappoint after that enormous buildup. Thank you, Anne. That was very sweet. I'm very humbled by all that. So you sent me some questions.
I did.
Yes.
Yes.
And
Okay.
I'm thinking maybe that's probably the easiest thing to do if you just want to ask
Perfect.
questions, and then people can think of their question.
Perfect.
We can go to that.
Somebody actually contacted me earlier today, asking a question. Didn't know they were asking it to you, but asking me a question. And I said, "Oh, I think I have the perfect person to answer this question. She's going to be on the war room tonight, so I think you'll get a question from at least one of us very soon." Okay, so my first question was, you have made incredible strides as regional coordinator for Florida Action Committee, which never ceases to amaze me. Just you're amazing. The level of awesome volunteers you have, and just the work you get done, and and then you just got put as advocacy director on the Florida Action Committee board. So now you're on two boards. What initially inspired you to dedicate your life to this cause, and what continues to drive you today?
Well, first, I'm blushing. So first, I got to give credit to my team. That it's an amazing group of people. So the organization Florida Action Committee is amazing. They are 3,500 strong and carrying on. But I personally have a team of dedicated, actively people actively assisting me to for the progress and the accomplishments that I've achieved. I didn't do all of that alone, and I couldn't have done it all alone, and I need to give credit where credit's due. In fact, that's a lot of my message, is that we need each other. So that's that. Then the inspiration is, for many years, like many of us, I lived in quiet desperation. I was terrified. I was depressed, and I lived wrapped in a blanket, now affectionately known to my family as the burrito blanket, because I wrapped myself up like a burrito in it. So every spare moment, I was in my blanket on my sofa when I wouldn't allow myself to sleep in my bedroom on my bed, because I was on high alert. I was always afraid somebody was going to bust in my door, law enforcement or neighbors that didn't like me. And I lived that way for a long time. I was existing. And then, so I became a member of Florida Action Committee at the very beginning of my probation in 2013. And I wanted to be active. I just, the fear was paralyzing for me and crushing. So, and then something happened in the beginning of 2021. My mom died, which is very sad. However, it made me, it was, a watershed moment for me. My mom wasn't very old, and it made me think, life is short. What am I waiting for? What am I doing? And I had to make a decision right then. What am I going to do with the rest of my life? And I decided that I didn't want to live the rest of my life, crushed by guilt, living in fear and stigma, or because that was not hadn't been good. I'd done about 8.5 years of that, and hadn't been good. So I decided that to me there was only one other alternative, and that was to actively advocate for my own dignity and for others who were in the same boat. That I needed to fight for the restoration of my constitutional civil rights. I realized that nobody was going to do this for me. So you can live for a long time, particularly when you're paralyzed by fear and depression and all that. And you're waiting for your savior to come flying in with the cape, and they're going to da 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 da, and they're going to fix it all, and that isn't going to happen. And so my mom passing away made me realize the time is now. Life, you don't know when it's all going to be done for you, so you might as well be working on what you need to do right now. And so I went from 0 to like 1,000 miles an hour. And I really credit the Florida Action Committee for providing me with the resources, and the platform and the tools to do that, because I was already a member and I contacted them and said, what can I do? And they immediately met me with training and inspiration. But that was my original inspiration for getting active.
That's a really good story.
And so tragedy can be turned into something that's beautiful. And I credit my mom all the time for turning something that was tragic into beautiful. What drives me today, in one word, hope.
Who keeps
Hope
that?
is so critical. And I also have a strongly held belief that human beings are precious and they're worthy of redemption and an opportunity to overcome their past and live their best lives. Everybody is worthy of that. Now, whether they take that opportunity and make something of it, that's up to them.
Yeah, that's the thing that I've really appreciated about war is, from the get-go, it's like, nope, we want it taken down. We're not going to just kind of halfway make it better and leave a few people on it. We think that this is bad treatment of anyone. We think that the way we are treating everyone hurts us all. And honestly, like, if we could take the time and energy that people use being hateful and mean to all the million people on the registry and all their families, if we could take that time and energy and money and focus it on the people who really need help, what a world that would be, And if we could recognize that love, not hate, is what's going to make those changes. The idea that just because somebody did some bad thing in their whatever childhood 10 years ago, last year, that somehow that means that we should all just torture them indefinitely. Who's that helping again? No one.
No, misplaced. It's misplaced effort. It's misplaced energy. And you're so right that if we could put all that energy, and there's so much resources and energy and thought that goes the wrong direction into the right direction, we could achieve a great deal, a great deal of prevention, a great deal of healing, a great deal of actually addressing the things that do happen that are not right in the correct way in our criminal justice system so that they don't happen again. And I would love, that's what I'm fighting for. I'm fighting to dismantle what is, which is completely ineffective and destructive, and move it to something that is effective and not
Because,
destructive.
yeah, honestly, the way we do it now, even if something is happening, something yucky is happening in your own house, which is what's most likely happening, it's most likely somebody who knows somebody. When your young person comes to you and says something is happening, like, your option is ruining one person you love's life, or damaging another person that you love, and neither of those are good choices.
And usually it usually damages them and everybody around them. The way the system is set up, it's not set up to address a problem and then allow people to heal. It just decimates everybody.
Yep, absolutely. It's going to decimate the child and the perpetrator and the victim,
And
both
the
of these people,
family.
and
Yes.
everyone all around
Yes. So I don't believe it. Like I said, I think human beings are precious and worthy. And that's not how we treat human beings. That's not how we make anything better. So that's my inspiration. That's how I keep, that's what drives me
All
is,
right, awesome.
oh, yeah.
Okay, I
So,
got another question for you.
all right.
So, Shine Voices has been a pioneering project for women forced to register. And this was the presentation you gave at the thing that everybody just loved. I think it's because women do everything a little better. just a little biased, but
Sure, just a little one.
what strategies have been most effective? Oh, wait, no, that's the wrong one. Can you share how this initiative has empowered women and how we can support this important work?
Yeah, so this is kind of my boilerplate. The Shine Group is an oasis for women forced to work. Somebody wants you to think about it. In a hostile world, which we live in, it's an oasis. We've created a safe space where we can let our guard down, be understood, be accepted for who we really are, in the rest of our lives and in the world, even with people we love. We can't really do that. And in this space, we learn from each other and become stronger because of it. So it's not in spite of our traumatic experiences, it's because of them. And that's also very counterintuitive and different than the way the world or the culture addresses it. We see this thing that happened to us, and then we are making something good out of it. It was a bad thing, and we're making something good out of it. And we encourage each other to find and embrace our unique shine, which is the thing that is special about you. And everybody's got that. And share it with others. So don't just hold it up for yourself. You got to find it first, but don't keep it to yourself. We're here for each other, and that makes us grow and become active in advocacy for ourselves and other persons forced to register. And to cut together, we've taken our experiences and we've developed them into our advocacy. So it's allowed us to step out of our comfort zones, step up, to become our best selves, to value our voices, and to use them to change the narrative. So I know that a lot of you have experienced this thing, this dynamic that happens to people forced to register, which is from sometimes therapy groups, definitely law enforcement supervision, and the culture at large will tell you, you are this thing that happened to you. That's who you are. Nothing you have to say about is valid. And so if you say anything about it, you're often told, well, you're rationalizing, you're diminishing, you are trying to place the blame on someone else, or and some of those things do happen, but everything we have to say is characterized like that. So you learn to shut up. You also learn right away that using your voice might get you into some sort of trouble, and you may just be speaking the truth and not doing anything wrong. And so have tried to create a space with amongst ourselves where that's not the way it is, because we see what we have to say as really important. We have a message, as do all people, that other people need to hear. And then, so I've seen my Shine sisters who were afraid to speak up. They now confidently advocate for themselves, and that's where we start. Self-advocacy is the where you start. You can't advocate for anybody else if you haven't figured out why you're important, worthy, and you have something to offer this world. So we advocate for ourselves first. And that means we have to ignore all the noise and the toxic information that has been poured into us in under the guise of making us well, and fill ourselves up with the truth. And so we in that space can reflect the truth to each other about it. We're completely honest with each other about each other and accept each other regardless. I have Shine sisters who were afraid to leave their county, even though they're not on supervision or probation anymore. They were afraid because of how we've been taught, you're traumatized. Step one,
Absolutely.
you step one toe out of your county and you're going to jail. And so they are afraid. And now they are able to travel. They are able to step out of their comfort zone and move about their state, of course, within their compliance zone and all that
Following the rules,
stuff.
right.
But people travel now. We share with each other how to do that right and stay safe. I have had sisters who were afraid to share their experiences with anybody because there was no comfort. Be able to do that completely honestly with anybody. And now they can participate in large conferences and public and speak on different parts of their experiences that they know are relevant and will help people understand. That's just a sample of the ways that we're empowering each other. And so together we're stronger. Together we can help each other do that. And nobody could create that space for us. Again, it's really important that you start advocating first for yourself. We created that for ourselves. We didn't look for somebody else to create it for us.
Yeah, and you could really see that. And I think that's what people found so inspiring about that, about your presentation. It wasn't, you all, spoke, for the same amount of time about the same thing. Each of these women had developed her own like shine. I mean, honestly, just her own shine. Sometimes it was a song, sometimes it was a poem. Sometimes it was just telling their story, and it was just so impactful to see the growth, like the personal growth that you could see that these women had made. And to just kind of hope that we could provide that kind of awesome space for anyone. You've really been a, just an inspiration. And one of the things that I find really inspiring about, I've been on this committee. It's called the National Coalition. Sorry, we just named it
I was going to say you guys
against
just named
National
yourself.
Coalition Against something registries, criminal registries.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we've just kind of started within the last maybe 3 months or so this group, and my position in war has been kind of challenging because when I first came on. The person who was there before me kind of didn't really like things did not go that well. The transition was not smooth, and so I really didn't have a lot of guidance, let's say. And so it's been really hard because I don't have a big committee of of people, and I don't have like big lists of all the cool stuff I should know. I've just had to sort of wing it, which is hard. It's really hard. And so the
It
idea that we now have this coalition where people will share things with one another, to me is like, a godsend because to be able to hook people up with, the many, many resources between Florida Action Committee and AXL and WAR, we've got a lot of good stuff already going. And, instead of feeling like we're in competition for, members, and we shouldn't be in competition. We should be all, and I've been that way from the start. Like, if somebody needs help, I'm going to send that out. And if someone needs something that I have, I'm going to send it out. The world doesn't get stronger when we work as individuals. The world gets stronger when we work together. And,
Yes.
I've been really excited about having you on just because, between the fact that I took over in a weird, the transition didn't go that well, and the fact that I had a, nearly killed me bike wreck. It's been a challenge on my end, and so I'm really excited to just, hear more from you. Okay, did I
Yeah.
have to finish your last question?
Well, you said how can you help? And you spoke to some stuff that's down farther on your questions, and so I really completely agree with you and want to expand on that. But how can you help was one of your questions. And here's how you can help. For one thing, shine is not when we do a presentation or we're on a call or whatever, we're not just for women. So we encountered that at NARSOL, that there had been some confusion, and many people attending thought that our presentation was just for women, and we made a point of personally walking up to everybody at the conference that we saw and said, "Please come, it's for everyone. And our message is for everyone. And we're encouraging everyone to do something like this in their own way." And so that's the first thing I want people to know. How can you help is realize it isn't just for women. And we're going to talk a little bit more about who all we're including. Everybody's in our boat with us. And then if you are or you know a woman forced to register, please share with her about Shine and Shine Voices as a resource available to her and other women forced to register she may know. She may not be interested, but we at least right now, by design, do not have a website. People ask me, "Where's your website?" I don't have one. There's a reason for that. We put a lot of emphasis on in person. It's very, even though we meet virtually because we have members from across the country, we want to talk to you in person. We want, that's how we impact each other and encourage each other. So at this point, a website isn't in our future. It might someday be, but encourage people you meet to contact me. And Anne has my contact information. When the opportunity arises, attend one of our presentations. And like I said, we're not just for women. Come, so you might be surprised what you learn. You might be very surprised. Include, and this is super important, include women forced to register in all levels of all parts, realms of registry and advocacy against the registry. So every level from stuff in envelopes to leadership in all realms of advocacy against the registry. People should be thinking about it. I don't think for many years people even thought about it. They weren't actively excluding people, but just by not thinking about it, you can neglect whole groups of people. And we're going to talk about that in one of your other questions. So from discussion to development to decision making, and those all people need to be thinking, oh, are we including the women forced to register? Because we haven't been included. People just weren't thinking about us. They weren't going, oh, like, we don't need those people. They just weren't thinking about us. So think about us. And that's why I started the Voices Part of Shine. It was really important to me. We are more than a support group. We are an advocacy group. I started it because I became as soon as I started becoming active in advocacy, I couldn't help but notice the enormous void where the women forced to register should have been. There was this big hole. I mean, I will tell you, the first NARSOL conference I attended, and I've attended four now, I was the only woman forced to register there. It was a little lonely, but I was glad to be there. I was very glad to be there. It was also amazingly inspiring. Little old fire under me, and that fire kind of grew into a conflagration, actually. So it was a good thing. But I noticed a space that was open where we should be. And then, like I said, you don't wait for somebody to come in and save the day. It's your job to do it. So that's how you can help.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so that leads into you've increased Florida Action Committee's membership by over 350 members and helped create a more inclusive advocacy community. What strategies have been most effective in growing membership and keeping people motivated to stay involved?
So be in person. So I'm trying to look, the word I'm looking for is virtual is great. It's a fantastic tool, but I found that an in-person appeal was the most effective. And I did a lot of in-person work.
How do you go? Where do you do that? Because that's a scary thing for our movement. Do you set up a booth in the middle of a park event and have people come and hate on you? How do you do it?
You can do booths. We've done booths. I did not particularly do booth, but others in Florida Action Committee have set up booths, and they do them at like job fairs, reentry events, in places that are relevant. So yes, absolutely. And then we the Florida Action Committee does meet and greets, but then there were many people who are not attending those. And I sought them out. So meet people where they are. And that kind of leads into your other question about therapy groups. People live in group homes. Go visit.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Okay. So where are they? Meet people where they are. You need to seek them out. Okay. So a lot of people felt totally disenfranchised. A lot of people felt like the people that they did come into contact with were not necessarily representing them because they weren't registrants. And so I'm a huge proponent of registrants being active in advocacy. So it's incredibly important that people who are not registrants, who are family and our friends and people in the community who are supportive of us, be in advocacy. However, I feel like we can't do this without us in the picture. Okay, just not going to happen. And so I found that being a person forced to register and having team members who were for persons forced to register was very powerful. And I met people where they were and I sought them out and I brought other team members who were persons forced to register so we could relate. One of the other things is you don't wait for people to join. I don't anyway. I'm kind of a salesperson. So what I'm selling is hope. What I'm selling is you have an opportunity for to redeem your life. It isn't your past, and you can live your best life. And a lot of people haven't bought that product yet. And so I don't wait around. I encourage, I give them, I give, I give them the case for it. I've said, here's the case for membership, participation, active advocacy. I encourage them. And then I ask them to join. I'm like really bold. And not everybody's comfortable with that approach. And people need to, they want to be doing these things, customize, make it their own. I'm all about that. But that's how I did it. And people really responded to that. And then make it fun. I mean, our lives are so serious. We have to deal with such serious stuff every day, life and death. In fact, we try not to think about that right up here in the front of our minds, but it's always right back here because you can't forget it. So make it fun. So when I was meeting with guys in the therapy groups, or when I was having an in-person meet and greet, we were having fun. We made becoming members and learning how to be active and what the benefits were of participating. Like, you can't really do much by yourself, but together you can do a lot. You can encourage each other. We made it fun. And I think sometimes we forget the fun. I mean, I know that when we all go to a conference, so all of us who've attended a conference, we know that the fun is very important.
The fun is important.
Oh gosh, it lifts your spirits, it makes your heart sing, and do we ever need that? Well, so do the people that I was reaching out to. They might not ever get to a conference. This is their conference. So those are my answers. That's how that worked.
Yeah, that's awesome. I loved every bit of that answer. Okay, you're a huge advocate for engaging underrepresented groups such as women, people of color, and the LGBTQIA community. What unique challenges do these people face? As if you have to explain, because of course they do. And how can we ensure that our movement fully embraces their voices and experience?
Well, there are experiences that the challenges are much like the challenges that women experience, and then some of the women fall into some of these other categories, which makes them eat. So you're stereotyped, you're misunderstood, you're marginalized, you're neglected. People just don't think of you. They're not thinking badly of you. They're not intentionally leaving you out. They're forgetting about you. They even by advocacy groups, like I told you, when I entered into active advocacy, this was this gaping void that I noticed right away, and I was sitting right in the middle of it. And then I noticed right away that there were other people in the void. They should have been there, but they weren't there either. And it's not enough just acknowledge it. So I heard people, very well-meaning, lovely people that I know, acknowledging, well, the elephant in the room is that there are certainly people that are impacted by the registry, but they're not represented here. Well, yes, except for it's not okay just to say that. I mean, it's great that you're acknowledging it, but I thought to myself the first time I heard somebody say that at a conference, and it was my first national conference, I'm like, well, what are we doing about that?
Yeah.
Who's doing something about that? And then it goes right back to if nobody's going to do it for you. I mean, I can't say that enough times. You can't do everything, but if you see something that's important and it moves you and nobody else is doing it, you should be the one. You need to do something, say something, whatever it is. And each person, that's a different thing. And so what happens is their experiences are not heard then. So they're not there. So we're not hearing about how they feel or they experience things or what happens to them. They become isolated and hopeless, and they have lack of community. They don't feel like they fit in any community. Then there's little or few templates or models in law enforcement, corrections, probation, treatment, support groups for those people. And so that just makes them over here this little, and it goes back to how I said I was living my life before I became inspired to be active, which is the life of quiet desperation. And that's a horrible life, and I don't want it for anybody. And I will tell you that when I was going to the therapy groups and meeting with registrants, and at first you see right away that people forced to register come from every group. There's women and people of color and people whose first language is Spanish, and there's LGBTQ people of all sorts. And you're like, where are they? They are not be There's no space for them in the advocacy realm. Why is that? And they tended to be the most eager, enthusiastic people I spoke to, always, consistently, because they got it. They understood. They've been living it. They understood what you experience as a registrant because they were understanding and experiencing it and all these other places in their life. So this is a hugely untapped resource.
You're absolutely right.
So for people who are experiencing that, to be able to first learn how to advocate for themselves because they're important and they're worthy, and then have those ripples echo out into their family and their communities is powerful, and it needs to happen. And it's about respect for our worth as human beings. That's why we should do it. There is no other real reason. We need to respect each other as human beings and that we have worth. And when we don't have everybody, we don't have everything we need.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Okay, my next question. And I think this is going to speak to a lot of us here. Many people feel that the registry is impossible to dismantle. But you've consistently shown optimism through your work. What gives you hope that one day the registry will be abolished? And how can we maintain that hope as a community, this community that you're helping build?
Well, first, I don't expect it to happen overnight. Tomorrow, it's going to be a long process. I know that. And so I'm not discouraged by the fact that, I wanted it to happen in 10 years or whatever. I hear that from people. I can't believe this is still going on. And I understand their frustration with something that is so rotten to the core and it is so persistent, except for I feel like that's somewhat unrealistic because here we go. And I'm not saying these are all the same thing, so please don't get me wrong. They're not the same thing, but they help you understand the analogy. Here we go. So a lot of people thought we were never going to overcome slavery. It seemed intractable. It went on for hundreds of years. It was horrifying and hideous, okay? But we did, and people just kept on at it. And people have thought forever that that women were never going to have their civil rights vote be treated like a 100% of a human being. And really, that actually only happened in more recent years. But women kept on fighting for it and believing in it and not believing that they were less than a human being. And so there are many situations like this in history. I'm listing two really super duper egregious ones. They're not
No, you're
exactly
absolutely
the
right.
same, but the point is, if those people believed that they couldn't achieve it, maybe not in their lifetime, but they couldn't achieve it ever, they would have not ever achieved it. We get exactly what we think we're going to do. So if you think you can't do it, you're not. And so that's what keeps me alive. I know other people who had bigger mountains to climb. Climb those mountains one foot at a time with their brothers and sisters, and they got there.
That's awesome. I talk a lot, when I'm just having random conversations with strangers in parks about the things that have changed just in the last bit of my lifetime. The right to get married, for gay people to get married.
That's another good one.
I have a
Yes.
gay daughter who just got engaged, and if that had happened not even that many years ago,
Right.
that would never have happened. That's a big deal. The public has made a big change, and the
Yes.
war on drugs. We've gone from let's put a third of all the black and brown people in prison for smoking weed to like Missouri is occasionally debating whether to legalize psychedelic mushrooms now.
Exactly.
That's huge.
Those were on my list of analogies. I only picked two, but exactly, exactly. And if any person who was fighting for the overturn or the correction of the situation that existed before had said, oh, it's never going to happen. It's never going to work. I've been working on this for 10, 20, 30 years, and it just keeps on. Had they given up, they wouldn't have achieved it. We can't. We cannot give up. We must carry on and do what we can do. Be smart about how we work on things. Work hard, but work smarter, not harder. And like you pointed out before, work together. It's not a competition. We're all on the same team.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Okay, let's see. If someone has a question, you can feel free to like raise your hand and I'll call on your question too. But I made a long list of questions because, you know, she asked me to and it seemed like the right idea. Housing for registered citizens has been a big focus for you. I answer the 1-800 number here and I probably get a call and a half a day. And the number of people who call me saying, you know, I'm homeless. I just got kicked out of my this. You know, it seems like this is a snowball in the United States right now. It's kind of terrifying. Can you share a story where you witnessed the impact of securing housing for someone and why it's so critical that we support efforts to provide stable homes?
Yes. So homelessness, particularly among our community, is very, very severe. It's a bad, bad situation. And then being underhoused or not optimally housed is even bigger. So there's people who are housed, but it is not at all how they should be housed. And I think that it's one of these problems where we're going to have to use our national coalitions to come together and work on a comprehensive approach and strategy. It's state by state, region by region, obviously, because there's lots of different restrictions in different places. However, I think it would be very helpful. But in the meantime, I highly recommend, because it's heartbreaking, I get those calls too, that each person who can do something, and get to know other people who are doing something. So you have somebody else to turn to if you can't do something. Just that, having a network of people who you know, who know how have housing, know of housing, etc., is helpful, but it needs to be much more organized than that. That's just my personal belief. I felt like that we've needed something like a consortia of housing resources where we're working together for a long time. Me personally, and I hesitate a little bit to toot my own horn. I have done this and have made it a priority for a long, long time, actually, before the registry impacted me. Housing was a huge thing on my heart. But my partner and I, that was our income, and we own rental houses. And we just prioritized, we made a decision that we were prioritizing the renting. And when we had to sell, selling to persons forced to register and or a homeless person. So there is nothing in the law that says that we can't prioritize those people. That is not a discriminatory practice. And so before we would advertise, we would reach out. We'd put out the word. And that's where a consortia or an organization specifically where we're all together doing that would be very helpful, because we could only do what we could do. But we definitely did that. And we housed, between the two of us, many persons forced to register, and sold houses when we were selling to persons forced to register. And there's one story that is particularly poignant, where a gentleman, he's a veteran, his offense was well over 20 years ago. He'd been living for 17 years in the same apartment, and his community adored him. They called him the mayor. They loved him so much. And he had great relationships with his neighbors. And then his community was purchased And the new owners decided he had to go. So he had been renting for 17 years, no issues. And fortunately, he was one of my team members and he called me because he knew that's what I do. And he said, oh, this is happening. And of course, he's in a panic. And we talked about it. And based on the, they weren't using appropriate practices. And I was able to, based on his lease and give him some advice, just on, I said, here, this is the landlord-tenant statute. Read this. Can you see where what you're, it's happening to you isn't congruent with what the landlord-tenant statute says has to happen? I said, that's in your favor. Here's some things that you can do. And so he was able to buy himself some time so that he could get his affairs in order because they had given him all the 15 days. Who can put it together in 15 days, especially people with,
Truly.
yeah, I mean, you know how hard it is for us to find housing. And then he had
Yep.
15 days. So I was able to say, look, because I was a property manager, a realtor, I knew for him to look at the statutes first. He was able to buy himself a couple months. And then my partner had a house that he was selling so he could buy another property. And he immediately offered it to our team member, and it was the perfect fit. And he'd never bought a house before. He'd always just wanted to be a renter, but because of the situation, he knew it would be more secure for him. And I'm telling you that I know home ownership is not in everybody's future, but I encourage it. It's one of the things that I would talk about with folks in the therapy groups because they would want to know. And I said, if there's any way you can possibly purchase, you're in a more secure position. Because in most municipalities and states, if you own the house and something changes, like they build a playground, you can still continue to own it. That's sometimes not true, but most of the time. And that, and so he bought his house and he's so house proud. He's so happy. He's at peace because nobody's going to make him move. And that's what I want for everybody.
Yeah, so that actually, I have a question, I guess. So about 9 months ago, I got a call on the 1-800 number from a guy. He'd just gotten out of prison. He served every minute of his time, so he wasn't on probation or parole. And he assumed that he was going to go home to the house that he had lived in with his girlfriend before. But while he was away, they put a somebody put in one of those private daycares on his block. So when he came home, they said, "You're not allowed to live there." They told him he had one day to find a new place, and if not, they were going to throw him back in prison. So, I didn't have any good ideas. I was actually out of town at the time, and I said, "Just use my address." So he listed my address, and he's basically still lives with the girlfriend, same as he always has, but he just puts my address down, and he's been looking now for 9 months, and he found a place. We looked it up on our map, and there was already six other guys forced to register on that block. So we were like, "Oh, it's going to be fine." He collects enough money to pay first month's last month's deposit, and when he goes and asks at the downtown place, they say, "Oh, honey, I'm on." He goes downtown to register, and they say, "Oh yeah, those guys were grandfathered in. There's a school on that block, and you can't live there because you're not grandfathered in." So it's like, he didn't get grandfathered into his place, but somehow these guys got grandfathered into their place. It just seems.
Did he own his
No,
house?
he's
That's
rent.
why. So they won't grandfather if you rent. It's, and that's why I encourage home ownership. I tell people, start saving now. If you can start saving and buy a modest house in 5 years, it'll be definitely worth it because it's good. If they put something in your neighborhood and you're a renter and you're on month to month or your lease comes up, you're out. That's what happened to our team member and friend, is that he was renting and it had rolled into month to month, and they gave him a 15-day notice. You have to be the owner. And I heard, and I cannot recall which state this was, but not so long ago, recently, they changed the law and to where they weren't grandfathering. But I don't know where that is, and I'm not sure that that'll stand. I think that'll be challenged. But I don't, I'm not an attorney, but I just have a feeling based on my real estate experience, home ownership is kind of like freedom of speech. It's one of those very bedrock ones. You'd think that voting would be too, but it's property ownership and home ownership is. But there's like even people who decide just to buy a home, which is a daunting task. I would advise people not to build. I had story after story about people did all their homework about building. They picked the right approved address for their, and by the time they got it built, it was no longer an approved address. And so I would, people, I'm like, I know you want your dream home. You've saved this money. You should live in the home that you want. However, there's this enormous danger. So, and not everybody can buy a house. It just happens to be a safer option if you can make it happen. And I try to encourage people to do whatever they can to make it happen. But we need to have a more organized way that we work together. And then people need to be thinking about helping somebody with housing in whatever way they can.
No, I
So
love that.
we would tell people when we go out in person to these meet and greets and I'm talking to people and making new members, I'm like, who do you rent from? Is your landlord clearly accepted you? Will they accept anybody else on the registry? Where is that? I want that contact. We got a lot of contacts for persons, landlords that rented to registrants that way.
That's a great idea.
It was a question we asked every time. And so we were able to start cataloging and have a list of people, but we need to do that on a much more organized basis.
Yes. And it's hard, war is all 50 states. So it's really hard to keep track of that kind of thing. And so that's another thing I was really excited about when the coalition started talking about the basically pooling our resources and making shared things, because like I do have some great contacts, I've got great contacts here and there and the other place, but I would love to put those all on a big list of great contacts and share it with people. That's really the way forward, I think.
I totally agree. And all of us property managers, landlords, et cetera, housing providers, we ought to know about each other because
Absolutely.
we can make our resources available in a better, more efficient way if we do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
Okay, so Jane, if you can hear me, oops, oh, she's unmuted. Okay. You asked me a question earlier today, and I said, if anybody's going to know the answer to this or know who might know it, tonight's the night to ask it. I think, are you
hi.
there?
Yes. Can you hear me? I
Yes.
can hear you.
I think my question was it relates to homeless in Florida. And I understand that data collection in Florida, and I learned this from COVID results, is manipulated. But I was wondering if there's any possible way to determine how many of the homeless in Florida, documented homeless, are people on registries.
Yes, it takes some cross-referencing. It takes a person who can access the entire registry. So that's available from FDLE, and we actually, the Florida Action Committee actually has that because it's the registry and it's public, and you can download it, and then you have to cross-reference. But you can find all your homeless folks. It takes time and effort, so somebody has to be wanting to do that. And the manipulation is that I, as far as I know, because I used to be involved in those counts. It's called a point in time. It's called the PIT count, PIT, point in time, and they do it once a year. And the reason why they call it point in time, because they want to know if a person's homeless at that moment. And to me, that's a manipulation in itself, because they could have had a sofa to sleep on the day you asked them if they're homeless. But if they didn't have a place and they were living out on the sidewalk or behind the public's dumpster for the rest of the year, they're not counted as homeless. They also don't count no-till motels and a lot of other places where other people would consider homeless. And they consider themselves homeless. They do not have a stable place to live. They cannot count on a place to lay their head from one day to the next. It's not counted that way. That's the way you would think it's counted. So that indeed the numbers look lower than they really are. So for us, it would have to do the PIT counts. It was heartbreaking because you have to ask the question, and the answer to the question is how they count it. And then, as the last time I did a pit count, which was some years ago, they did not ask if you were a registered citizen or some other, I think, relevant questions. It's so there's no data for that in an official format. So
Sure.
that's a government format that they use. That's how they determine the rate of homelessness.
Yeah.
So it would be upon us to take our the registry information and cross-reference it.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, I think this is intentional. I think the fact that
Yes.
they've got every one of these names on lists in all these different states, I think they make it intentionally difficult for us to m make any data out of that, because if we could, people would start to understand what bullshit it is. You know,
Yeah.
people would start to understand, oh, so wait, you're telling me one of my members once sorted her state. You know, she painstakingly went through her whole state's registry and she sorted it by how old people were when they caught their charge. Guess what the tallest number was on that graph? 17. So, you know, here we are, we're telling people that we're keeping your kids safe. Oh, we've got this list that you can make sure your kid is safe. The thing that your kid is probably at the most, definitely at the most risk of, the thing that anyone is the most risk of is getting put on this list. And
Yes.
if people understood that, they would feel differently about it. But
Yes.
that's not the message they want to sell.
No, and the other thing is that, so here's the thing, some of it's intentional and some of it is that it isn't their priority. We don't care. So they're not going to put any energy into they are not concerned for registrant homelessness. It's not a concern of theirs. In fact, in some of our counties, we've had some of our law enforcement officials and elected officials actually say they were excited about throwing them out into homelessness, which is ridiculous, but and so counterproductive and counter to what they say they're trying to achieve. But it's not a concern. They don't care. That's why the numbers aren't put together like that. Not their priority, but it needs to be our priority.
It does need to be our priority.
People are homeless, and the one of the things that was brought to the fore at the Axol virtual meeting that just happened that I participated in with Shine and some other FAC people participated in, and nationwide, one of our biggest problems for homelessness is for seniors and disabled persons because they're not allowed in many states. They're not being allowed into the kind of housing they need, senior assisted living, convalescent
Nursing
living,
homes.
physical therapy, in-house. I mean, they're just not allowed. And so they become homeless because they can't care for themselves. And this is becoming an enormous problem as people start to age out.
Yes, right. Yeah, and so many of the people who, the phone calls that I take every day are people whose, their crime was 20 years ago, 25 years ago. Yeah, as they get older and older, they need more things, and those things are being intentionally kept away from them. The
Yes.
other thing that I think the feds or the cops do intentionally is the way that they change the labeling of crimes so that you can't really tell what things are. Like in Illinois, I think 99% of the people on the registry in Illinois are called sexually violent predators,
Yes.
and 1% are called offenders. You know, that's just ridiculous. Like, there's no way that 99% of the people on this list are the worst ones. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. So it's an intentional effort to make people scared. And they left that 1% just in case your dad's a lawyer or a judge or,
Yes. Well, and it's also an intentional decision to it's job security funding. There's a lot of they use it for
so much
election.
money.
There's a lot of things that they use it for. But all it really does is harm the people that they're labeling it with, and it's not accurate. You need to flip it. So
Absolutely.
the 1% are the sexually violent, okay, offenders, and the other people are the people who did
Exactly.
something wrong, but they weren't sexually violent.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right.
Okay. So,
Okay, I think we have time for one more question, maybe.
okay.
As someone who has given so much of your time, energy, and resources to this work, what do you think it will take for others to step up and contribute, whether through volunteering or financial support?
That's such a good question, and it's really my mission as an advocacy director is to convince people what they need to do that. What is it? They, for one thing, we need to sell them hope. I'm going back to what I said inspires me, and what do people need? They need hope. So they need to know that there is hope. Okay, so one of the things that the Shine Group is doing is, we don't just go to advocacy conferences where we're preaching to the choir. I mean, that's good stuff because we need to encourage each other and we need to share information with each other because we don't know everything, except for our community needs to know this stuff too. Okay. So we go out and we've done presentations like at St. Francis a University in New York, and our presentation was for the students. They're not in, registry impacted advocacy. These are folks that are going to grow up and become law enforcement and attorneys and bureaucrats and all kinds of different things. And we went and did it to educate them. And people need to know that that is what builds hope. Okay, so I tell people all the time, I tell them my story about, I'm living the life of quiet desperation. And then something happened into my life, which makes me realize, wow, I could kick it tomorrow. Anything could happen. And is this how I wanted my life, the legacy of my life to be? I needed to make a decision. And other people need to think about that. Is this what you want? Or do you want hope? And do you want to work for hope and build hope? And so it's our responsibility, people who have already, were already walking down that journey. And for me, it's a journey of advocacy. We're never done walking down that journey. And we're hopefully arm in arm. And we're not, shouldn't be walking down it alone. It's our responsibility to come alongside people and explain to them and demonstrate more than anything, with our enthusiasm, with our positive attitude, with our work, there is hope. And to
Absolutely.
demonstrate to other folks, this is why you, this needs to change. And those two things go together. Those so when I'm talking to folks about what we're doing, I'm saying, look, there's hope because I'm going out here and I'm actually talking to the community. They could throw some rocks at me, but I'm going to do it anyway. There's hope. We can change minds, and then we need to build our own hope and build each other's hope. That's what we do, is we reach out, you come alongside somebody, and like I said, when I had you ask me how I made the members, well, you meet them where they are, and you sell them some hope because it's the most important thing you'll ever buy. And then you explain to them, it's our responsibility to keep this hope alive, to build this hope, and then to share it with everybody else.
Because there's a lot of us, right? If you consider
Yes.
there's a million people on there, and every one of us
Yes.
has four friends.
At
There's
least.
5 million of us at least, and we need them to all stand up with us. I really liked this idea that's been thrown around of a universal coming out day for people on the registry. I want to start gathering, gather because we all need to be making the team a little wider. We all need to be having these conversations. I can't pick a day that goes by that something doesn't come up where I could say, oh yeah, that's some bullshit, and here's why. To just random strangers, every once in a while, they're assholes, and I, have to go home and
Doesn't that happen anyway?
temporarily cocoon for just a second. But we can't stay in our cocoons, and we can't expect that it's going to be politicians that fix this for us or lawyers that fix this for us, because politicians and lawyers have their own interests at heart. They are not out there to help anyone. They're out there to help themselves. So we have to have these conversations with each other. We have to do the hard work and be brave. And it is a lot easier to be brave with peers. So this idea of maybe we start gathering petitions, start gathering people who will say, okay, once we get to this number on a certain day, we'll all on the same day say, I love somebody on the registry, or I think the registry is bullshit, or whatever we decide to say, and post this message in a way. If just one person does it, the haters just attack. But I think if everybody did it, like Real Coming Out Day, it was easy to, for grandmas to be crabby about gay people when they thought a gay person was that guy with the assless chaps in the gay pride parade. When it's like your nephew, your neighbor, it's a lot harder to hate somebody that you know and love.
Love,
And
yes.
therefore, the reason that hiding and never talking to anyone and not letting anybody know who you really are,
It
they
just
don't get a chance
perpetuates
to love
that.
you.
Yeah, it just perpetuates that hate. And here's the thing. You're right, sometimes people respond ugly or whatever. And we have to keep in mind that happens anyway.
That's true.
People ask me sometimes, aren't I afraid? Aren't you afraid? And I'm like, well, of course I am. I'm a human being. I know all the stuff that could happen to me. I'm not an idiot, but I'm much more afraid of what my life will be if I don't do this. I live in danger every day, and I am choosing the better. Okay, so somebody might not respond well, right? And we know this. But that doesn't mean that you don't you take opportunities to speak out. And there's a couple of great examples I can use. One is a big flashy one, and that's like last year, which was the second year I went to the steps of the Supreme Court. The first year I went with the War Conference. We went out there, and it was a smaller group, more intimate group, which kind of made it even a little more scary, right? And we spoke, and then people were just coming up. People who were visiting the Supreme Court were just walking up to us and asking us questions. And any one of those opportunities could have gone the wrong way, but actually, they didn't. And my favorite one of all was a group of looked like middle schoolers about that age, okay, which could make you very nervous if you're us, right? But we know we're good. We know we're okay. We know why we're out there. Okay. We're out there demonstrating our constitutional civil right to use our voice and talk about something people need to know about. So we're feeling good about it. They came up. They had chaperones. We weren't like seeking them out. They're chaperones. Let them come up. They asked us what we were talking about. And we just told them. Now, mostly age appropriately. No gory details, but we let them know why we were there. And they asked excellent questions, amazing questions. I was so proud of them. And I was so grateful to their chaperones. And I told them that. I said, I really want you to know how much I appreciate you allowing them to ask us these questions. That is an amazing experience that if we had not stepped out of our comfort zones, and we were out of our comfort zones, okay, and just did it. Knowing that maybe it wasn't going to go well, those kids will never forget. Those adults that were listening are never going to forget what we said. Those are the things we have to find a way to do. Okay, so that's the flashy example, right? But the not so flashy example is when you are gathering with family, or you're going to your Veterans of Foreign Wars group, because these two examples have actually happened. For myself, after my mother died, it was COVID, and we didn't get to have her memorial for 6 months. And I went to my mom's memorial, and all the families there, most of them know about me, but no, it's not something anybody wants to discuss. Everybody's itchy about it, and we all know how that is. But in the appropriate moment, I walked up to all my loved ones, and I handed them a flyer from Florida Action Committee that was designed for the community, right? Not people in their advocacy realm, people who don't know anything about what we do. Handed it to them, and I said, I know you know about me. I know you don't really want to talk about it, but I really want you to know what this is about. Please take a minute and read it on your own time. If you have questions, I'm here to answer them. If you don't ever want to talk about it again, I get it. Do you know how many of them actually just became members? They became my supporters in my advocacy. Because I stepped out of my comfort zone and talked to people who were outside of our cocoon. And then we had some men who were in the therapy groups. So this is some of the positive impact in the therapy groups. And they were so inspired that they were very active in their Veteran of Foreign Wars group. They took the flight. They said, "Can we take a stack of these to our meeting?" I said, "Absolutely, gentlemen, please." They took them. They asked permission to set them there. People took them. The guy who was the leader there said, "Oh, could you please do a presentation about this? Because I'm getting questions and I think that they would like to hear from you." The gentleman did, and they have all kinds of folks who are being supportive of them. But those are just examples of, in our own way, it doesn't have to be flashy. And some maybe it won't go well, but
Well,
maybe it will.
yeah, if every one of us did this. So Greg and I live pretty much everybody knows, right? I'm president of this organization. I live my life pretty out loud. And once in a blue moon, I have somebody that just can't look past it. They're struggle busing. But knowing that I'm living my life out loud, it's a little scary at first, but it's so much just more. It makes my days less scary, right? When you go around thinking that someone's gonna find out, oh, someone's gonna find out, someone's gonna find out. The people that are gonna be Haiti are gonna be Haiti anyway.
Exactly.
I kind of like knowing, right? I like putting myself out there. Like, this is who I am. If you got a problem with it, you just let me know, and that's fine. I've got plenty of people that love me just for who I am and love Greg just for who he is. And if you don't want to be one of those people, that's fine.
Right.
But living out loud like that means that we're going to be a lot more likely to make this happen. So I encourage every one of us to go out in your communities and Galen sometimes talks about, there's ones and twos. The ones are the people that you can get to, they're almost on our side already. The twos we got to work on a little bit. The fours are the crazy nut jobs with the, selling bumper stickers. So we're not working on the threes and the fours, but if we could get more and more of these ones and twos on our side and on our team, that's how the LGBTQ got gay marriage on the ballot.
Yes.
That's how they ended slavery. That's how they, ended the war on
Yes.
drugs. It's
Yes.
by being out loud and having these conversations and encouraging people to join us. And I really just think that's the only way forward. If we think we're going to do this with lawsuits and visiting our lawmakers, the lawmakers can't get anything done right now. They're a shit show.
The lawmakers are going to only follow what the community thinks it wants. So it's kind of this vicious, horrible cycle where they feed them what they think the community wants, the community eats it, and they want more of that. And so it's up to us. We are the community. When they talk about public safety, I'm like, my safety, I am public, I am the community. So if we don't, as individuals, in our own way, and that's what's really important when you want somebody to start this journey and advocate for themselves, it's really important that they understand they don't have to be you and you don't have to be them. We all do. Like, I believe that the litigation and the lawyers, because there's some amazing ones, and I believe the people that go and talk to the judges, they're doing something too. Everybody's got to do what they can do in their own way to make a
But
difference.
they need, even the people talking to lawmakers every day, we gotta talk to the rest of the people so that we'll
Yes,
support them.
exactly.
It's a
If you
snowball.
don't change the community climate, and that's done one person at a time, then the lawmakers and the policymakers will continue to think that the community supports that and that they can use it to get elected and maintain power, et cetera, that those policies and laws are going to be supported by the community. But if the community's mind is changed because one person at a time we're having conversations and we're being real and we're then it will change. That's how it happens. Just like you changed your grandma's mind because your grandma, oh, well, oh, my neighbor, this lovely young man who's my neighbor, he's not that horrible stereotypical image that I thought is a lovely human being. He brings me muffins and has coffee with me on Sundays. That's where it happens. And this is why we have to have hope. That's where all of those horrible things that were existed as institutions. in our nation and outside of our nation for sometimes hundreds of years and often decades, were changed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, I really appreciate your time with us, Danelle. I hope everybody found you as inspiring as I do. I'm going to give you the how to save the chat talk right now. So open your chat. At the top of the chat, there's these three little dots. So you click on one of those three little dots. Oh, and people were asking for your email. Can I share your email
Yeah.
right here in this chat?
Show
Okay.
the FAC one. Absolutely.
Yep. FAC region4b@gmail.com. So I just posted that in the chat. So you'll have it for later. Oh, I lost the B in my last time. Okay. So everybody
Uh-oh.
who I did it originally with, get the B in there. Florida Action, whatever. FAC.region4b@gmail.com. Okay. Thank you, everybody. I'll see you in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, Joey, you want to give us a little intro to your conversation in 2 weeks?
I actually will be here on President's Day, and I have a speech where maybe I'll be elected president by the end of it.
Excellent.
And I'm trying, and I want to remove the mask, and I want everybody to join this same movement. Like everything that Danelle was saying tonight, it was almost like this is what I asked for today.
All
So I
right.
wanted to hear that, and then we're going to build on that, and then keep building because there's going to be new faces in this fight, and there's hope coming. It's not as sad as everyone makes it seem. It's coming right now. So November 5th, I just ask you guys to tune in. It's going to be fun.
All right.
You'll
Okay.
forget about the election.
Oh yeah. Definitely go vote first. All right.
Do that.
I love you all. So you click on those three dots and then say save chat, and then I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you guys.
Where's the leave meeting button? Oh, there it is. Thank you, Danelle. You were great.
Thank you.
It's not
Appreciate
surprising. All
you.
right, see ya.